And good afternoon, you're very welcome to Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, right here on 90.3 Near FM. Coming up in the next hour, we've got our usual mix of music, interviews and all things literary, so stick around. Why pamper life's complexities when the leather unsmeared on the passenger seat? Indeed, wise words, Moz. Well, today we've got a great show. We have our regular contributor, Vanessa O'Loughlin of Writing.ie and Inkwell Group. We have Dave Lorden of Colony Magazine, and we have in studio, as usual, after 4 o'clock, we have Colm Kearns for our writer's interview. So, stick around. We've got a great show today, but I think first we're going to take a piece of music, and this is a little break from tradition. We usually have a policy here of always playing a Smith song, but we're going to abandon that today, jettison it, and play a Morrissey track. This one is off his album, Your Arsenal. He got in a bit of trouble after this, actually. A lot of accusations of xenophobia and racism, but I think he was just having a bit of a laugh anyway. But this track is called The National Front Disco. Hope you enjoy. And we're back here on Writer's Block 90.3 Near FM with Vanessa O'Loughlin. Vanessa, hi, how are you?
Hi there, Morgan, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Well, it's great to have you back on the show.
Delighted to be here.
Great stuff. We're talking today about literary magazines. Now, your website, writing.ie, there's a great little section dedicated to these literary magazines. So could you tell us how you link in with them?
Okay, well, basically, a lot of the literary magazines that are being... They're all over the country, actually. There's loads of them. Offer opportunities for writers to submit work. An awful lot of them do. And it's a great opportunity for writers to get a profile and to, for people to notice their work. So if anybody out there is writing, particularly short stories and poetry tend to be the main things. But there are also some magazines. There are some magazines listed on writing.ie as well that would look for non-fiction as well if people are writing non-fiction. But it's a great opportunity to find out, what's happening in the literary world, to have a look at them and then to submit your work and get published.
And what do you think the primary use for them is? Is it for guys starting off to possibly get a poem published and to see their story published? Or is it for, as you were saying there, some kind of a community to see events coming up and...
Well, I think they're aimed very much at readers, and a lot of them are for sale in bookshops and different places like that. There's a great one down in Cork called The Penny Dreadful, which actually I have to add more information on to the website about, and that's sold in bookshops in Cork and around the place. And so it's really aimed at readers, which is giving writers a platform then. They're a really fantastic opportunity for people to see their work in print, and there's nothing more exciting than seeing your work published. I remember the first time I got a short story of mine published. And it really is a big wow experience. So
yeah,
it's a really great encouragement for writers. But also, I suppose that they really do provide a platform for new talent, because you never know who might be reading your work.
Yeah, and in terms of, I'm just thinking of benefits for. I mean, is it a niche market? I mean, is what kind of person would be reading the literary magazine, or I mean, your average Joe on the street, or?
Well, I think a lot of the literary ones would be quite literary, so they would tend to be, I suppose more of your Sunday Times reader, perhaps, than your Daily Mail reader.
Yeah,
not wanting to slag off any Daily Mail readers at all. I'm sure there's lots of who love literary magazines and short stories. But in fact, actually, that's completely changed what I just said there, because actually, they're for people who enjoy short stories. And it's not so much necessary that they are literary and terribly highbrow. Some of them are just, really are just vehicles for short stories. So they're aimed at readers. They're for all sorts of different types of people, and the age range of people who read them is enormous too. So I mean, they can be read by guys in school, right up to anybody, any age.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point you make about the age range. I one thing in particular about magazines that I'm always interested in is the distribution. You'd find magazines in places like the IFI. I mean, a lot of them are handed out free. And kind of the retired people in Dublin, would Would people be magazines be planning where to leave their magazines to target?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of them would work with the bookshops, and they would drop their magazines into different bookshops. So a lot of the independent bookshops would stock them.
Yeah.
A lot of them are online, so they're very accessible, and I think that probably broadens their readership enormously. A lot of them you can access online. There's just such a huge variety of them. Stinging Fly would be a great one. So some of them produce then anthologies in print too. Fish magazine, which is a competition platform, I suppose, as much as anything else, produces a fish anthology every year, and that's one of the most high profile ones to get into in terms of competition and that type of thing. So it tends to publish about a very good standard. Stinging Fly would be the same. They would publish very, very high standard work by really good writers. So I know people who spend years writing stories and submitting to those publications in order to get published by them, because they're really a big gold star if you can get into them.
And I think that's a key point that you just said there, the fact that so many of these magazines are available online. We've got in studio with us today after 4 o'clock, we've got Colm Kearns, a representative of the Runt Zine. And
that's a great magazine, and that's very much online. Yeah, definitely. It has a whole variety of stuff in there.
But he brought in, I've seen a couple of the issues of the Runt, and it's... for something that a couple of guys that just got together for the passion of producing a magazine, like, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to hold in your hand.
I think that's it. I think what these guys are doing is putting great illustration, great photographs, together with really, really good literature. Mm. There's another one called Bare Hands, which is a poetry journal, which is a mixture of photographs and poetry, and that is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, they're just lovely, lovely things, and so they're really nice to have, and to particularly to subscribe to if people are interested, and they don't want to have to go off hunting for them. If they can get subscriptions to them, then they'll just arrive in their letterbox every month or so, and that's a really good. That's a really good way of keeping in touch with new writing, finding out what's going on. Because anybody who wants to submit to these magazines, it's really important that you actually read them before you submit. Because they're all different, and they all have slightly different styles, and they all have different editors. So it's really important that you do get copies and you read them, and maybe a couple of different copies, because they might have different editors over time. It's great, and a subscription's a great way to receive them.
And so many of these magazines as well are kind of financed purely by subscriptions and by
donations. Helping the guys taking the stress out of producing the thing as well, if you can subscribe.
But I'm going to play devil's advocate here with you, Vanessa. Are they not relics of a different era? I mean, anybody who, when I was studying English in college, we would have looked at all the magazines in the early 20th, late 19th century, Dickens, a lot of Dickens novels, a lot of, even Ulysses, Joyce's Ulysses was serialised in a magazine.
Yeah.
That was how it first was produced. Are we past that? I mean, what place does a literary magazine have in modern Ireland?
I think it has the same place that those magazines had, and it's wonderful to see that we have just the right, brilliant writing, and also guys who are prepared to put these things together. Because in fact, most of the magazines are run by the Runt and the Penny Dreadful. They're run by guys who are just out of college or in college. Bare Hands is run by a gang of girls who are all in their early 20s, and they are they're really innovative. They're they're bright kids who really have just said, right, well, this is what we want to do. We want to provide an opportunity for people to get published. We want to bring, enrich people's lives by bringing story to them. And I think it's really very exciting. It's a very exciting scene. So I think, they are a hand-me-down from previous times, but they're very, very current. And they really have sort of been developed with a very current sort of feel to a lot of them. So they're very trendy. Definitely.
I agree. Yeah, I'm all in favour of keeping them alive and well. It's quite. I always find it's quite similar to print journalism. I mean, all of the trouble that the Sunday Times and the Sunday Business Post had to keep in print. When you think,
I think newspapers are a slightly different thing, because their news is daily, and now because of the internet, everybody gets their news literally by the minute. So it's very hard for newspaper print to keep up. But these things are great, because they tend to be monthly or bi-monthly or biannual or whatever, and they really trawl a huge number of different places, and people submit from all over the place. So there's a whole load of different types of stories that go into them. And they really do give opportunities to new writers. When you look at something like The Stinging Fly, Mary Costlow, who's just won the Irish Book of the Year, actually started off as being published by The Stinging Fly. She submitted stories to them. They really liked them. They actually put them into a collection called The China Factory, and they produced that book as a book, which then was nominated for the Guardian First Book Award, and really placed her on the map in terms of writing. And then she got a great agent, and she got a really, really great deal for her novel, which is Academy Street, which has just won Irish Book of the Year. So that's, you know, all through a literary magazine. And so it's very exciting that that they offer those opportunities and that they can be realised.
That's I wasn't aware of that. That's a wonderful little anecdote in terms of.
Yeah, it's a great story. I mean, it really, literally. I was speaking to her the other day, and she was saying, you know, she tried not to write for ages, and the stories just kept coming and coming and coming. And in the end, she started submitting them to Stinging Fly, and then they were able to see how great her writing was, and they put the collection together.
She was driven to write. That's lovely. Yeah, and it just actually gave her the confidence to. To maybe publish
Absolutely.
That novel, and we're all the better for it.
Yeah, Academy Street is an amazing novel, yeah. Actually, for anybody who's looking for a late Christmas present or has a difficult one to find. It's really lovely.
Speaking of advice for the Christmas season, Vanessa, any upcoming events, festivals, things that you could make us aware of in your brilliant position of book doctor?
Everything now really is going into the new year, because publishing is pretty much closing down for the Christmas period. Very sensible people. So there's not. I'm sure there are bits and pieces happening around the city, because there's some great things for people just generally who are interested in sort of events going on. The Milk and Cookies crowd are fantastic. They do like a spoken word type story event in the city, and also the Brown Bread Mixtape guys are fantastic. They do a lot of poetry. I think they run out of. They do it in a pub just off Dame Street. So there's always fantastic events going on, different readings and things like that. So it's just a matter of keeping your ear to the ground if you're interested in going to stuff.
Exactly. And as always, if people want to find out more about your organisation, Vanessa, where can they go? What can they do?
Yeah, they just pop in to see writing.ie. Go online, have a look at writing.ie, and that actually has loads of events listed on it. So if there's book launches and stuff coming up, book launches are a great way for writers to network with the trade and find out what's going on in the world, give you an opportunity to see exactly what happens. So there's loads of those lists on writing.ie as well. So lots of events, lots of new things happening. And we have a section called Submission Opportunities for anybody who is interested in submitting to, say, literary magazines or whatever. And there are always loads and loads and loads of listed in there. So with the submission guidelines, very important to follow the submission guidelines.
Brilliant. Well, Vanessa, as always, it's a pleasure to receive your expertise. All that remains now is for me to wish you a happy Christmas.
And to you too, Morgan. Listen, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks very much for taking the call, Vanessa. All the best.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That was Vanessa O'Loughlin of writing.ie and the Inkwell Group. I'd really recommend a look at that website, writing.ie, if you have the chance. We'll take another piece of music now. This is Townes Van Zandt from the late, great Townes Van Zandt. This song is called Pancho and Lefty. And that was Townes Van Zandt with Pancho and Lefty. You're back on Writers at Writers Block on 90.3 Near FM. We have Dave Lorden on the line. Dave, can you hear me?
Yeah, how are you doing?
Dave, how are you doing? Great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
Dave, we're talking about literary magazines today, so tell us a bit about Colony and your role with the magazine.
Yeah, Colony is an online magazine for different genres in the arts. Basically, so we have fiction, we have poetry, we have non-fiction, we have interviews, we have video art, we have contemporary music, and we have visual art, and all kinds of things. So just a space where different genres and disciplines can come into contact with each other, and hopefully to encourage multidisciplinary art in the future down the line. So my role in it is I'm one of the founding members, and I have to edit it, you know, so quite simply. There's seven other editors.
That's a big team. Did I hear you say, are you strictly online, Dave?
Well, we're having a meeting now in the new year to decide what we're going to do going forward. We decide everything kind of between the eight of us, and some of us would like to see a print version or a print annual or something like that. So we'll see as we go forward, yeah.
Okay, great. And you said some of the sections, you've got poetry, you've got visual art. Was that a conscious decision?
Absolutely. Because, I mean, the internet, you know, gives us the possibility of a space where all the art forms can be kind of brought together and, you know, thought of as being in discussion or in relation to each other. So, yeah, from the beginning, we wanted to have as wide as possible a range of art forms as was suitable, you know.
And at its conception, was that one of your founding goals? Did you feel?
Yes.
Is there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, the founding goal, really. Well, I mean, just to give a space for new expression, new forms of cultural expression. That's really it. And colony, of course, the title means we're into stuff that might be thought of experimental or out there or left field or whatever, you know.
Take us through why you chose colony then.
The title. Colony sort of indicates a space for experiment, a place where things can start again, a place where new things can emerge, and also risk, of course, because if you're into your science fiction, you know that lots of the Mars colonies fail, you know.
Is it a labour of love? I mean, is it
labour? Well, it's a labour anyway. So, of love, I mean, to an extent, yeah, to an extent. I've done fiction editor quite a bit with it, and it's hard to say that after reading 70 or 80 stories that you love it. But you do love the ones that you publish, obviously, you know.
Yeah, and do you guys, you publish once a month or once every 2 months?
No, well, we've done 3 issues this year. That's quite a heavy workload, so I don't think we'll be doing 3 next year. We might do 1 or 2 next year, and we look into other things we can do as well, you know. So it is a heavy workload, yeah. Even between 8 people, it's quite a lot.
Yeah, and take us through some of your fellow editors. I mean, were you all close friends beforehand, or...?
Well, we're colleagues, I suppose, more than friends, you know. We'd have become, you know, friends through shared interests in new literature, you know, new art and all that kind of stuff. So Kimberly Campanello is the poetry editor. And she's a poet, and she teaches in London. And Benjamin Dwyer is the music editor now. He's a, you know, well-known classical composer. And Tracy Hanna, young visual artist, is the visual arts editor. Cara Parkinson, who is well-known as a poet and a performer, he's the live arts editor. Rob Doyle, who people will know as the author of Here Are the Young Men, he's the non-fiction editor. And so on and so forth. So there's plenty of us, you know, and all active in the arts, you know, as both sort of organisers and artists themselves.
Yeah, that's quite a cast you've assembled. That sounds great. In terms of, you said, I asked you, were you all friends, and you said more colleagues. I mean, is there... it's an interesting concept, I think, to think of something that's so artistic and organic as your magazine to be considered kind of something professional and something that you have to organise.
Yeah, well, we're all professionals, you know. So yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't. I don't think there's any point in being anything but professional. So professional in the sense that we take seriously what we do, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
and
absolutely.
All have lots of experience doing it.
Artistic principle won't put food on the table, I suppose. Yeah.
No, but none of us are starving either, thankfully. at present, so yeah, I mean, money doesn't come into it. It's a volunteer pursuit, we're not in it for the money, one should say, but we all make our living our own way, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But you're, I mean, one look at your website, Dave. You're a very busy man. You teach at Mater Dei, you teach at the Irish Writers' Centre. You're teaching in the Big Smoke Factory. Why did you take on Colony?
Why did I take on Colony? Because, again, I thought there was a space there for it. Like, I also work with The Stinging Fly. They're a very good publisher of short fiction. So, I mean, there's a space there for art that kind of mixes up the genres, you know, and you can't do it in print, really. And also I'm attracted to the internet in terms of its distributive possibilities. It's kind of easier to be in a conversation with people from, you know, the States or even from Iran or from anywhere through the internet than it is through the print culture, you know. So
yeah,
that added aspect of being involved in a sort of a global experimental arts culture or scene, which isn't about really national boundaries, but is more about artistic boundaries and technological boundaries and things like that. So that would have been one of the things that brought us in, you know.
Well, yeah, that's a wonderful mission statement you just delivered there. That's brilliant. Dave, we're just running out of time here, but before I let you go...
What a pity. Yeah.
Before I let you go, if people want to find out more, contribute to Colony or perhaps...
Colony.ie.
Colony.ie, and
yeah,
can they contribute a piece, or is it?
Well, we're talking at the moment. We're going to have a meeting in January, and we're deciding whether we're going to remain open for submissions or just go commission based or stuff like that. You know, I'm not convinced that we would be any better remaining open submissions than just with commissions, to be honest with you, you know, because we'd all have a fairly good idea of what's out there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And while we'd always want to remain open to new stuff, there is a problem just in terms of the labour that we can put into it, because we don't have time to read hundreds and hundreds of submissions and to go through them. So we're looking at how we're going to deal with that going forward, you know. So, but all the news will be there as we go on, you know.
Okay.
And we're really looking more for readers than submitters, to be honest with you.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, it's been a real pleasure to have you on. Thanks very much for taking the call.
Thanks, Morgan, and thanks for asking me, OK? And good luck with your show. OK, thank you very much.
Good luck, Dave. All the best.
Bye-bye.
That was Dave Lorden of Colony Magazine. We are going to go to ads now, but stick around after the break. We've got Colm Kearns from the Runt zine. We're going to have a half an hour interview with him. And yeah, Writer's Block, 90 points. We'll be back soon.
This is 90.3 Near FM.
And you're back with Writer's Block on 90.3 Near FM. Well, at this part of the show, we do what we usually do. We have a writer in, someone aspirational, a budding talent, and we've got Colm Kearns from the Runt zine in today. Colm,
hello.
How are you?
I'm grand, thanks. Thanks a million for having me on.
Oh, absolutely, no problem, Colm. It's a pleasure to have you here. So start us off there, Colm. Tell us about yourself, work, study, where are you from, what are your influences?
I'm from out in Ballybrack, although my mum, as I was telling earlier, comes from nearby in Coolock. So
so you're a local. Get that
one. Yeah, somewhat. I'm a creature of Northside, so it's a miscegenation. You know?
Yeah.
But at the moment, I'm like very hopefully with a good deal more hope than optimism, applying for PhD funding and not working, unfortunately, at the moment, not for want of trying. So it just does give me more opportunities to focus on writing and things, which is an upshot of being unemployed.
Yeah, that's usually the case, isn't it? The unemployed turn to art. So how did you come to writing?
Just through reading, I suppose. Like, you know, since as long as I can remember, I've been into reading, you know, when I was really young, it would be my dad reading stories to myself and my brother, and then as I got older, I'd be reading things myself. Initially, like when I was, I'd say, you know, all through my childhood and teens, what would generally happen was I would be big into fantasy and sci-fi, and my writing projects usually consisted of planning out some epic adventure that consisted of spending so long world building and coming up with characters before having written a line of, you know, the actual story itself. And then I'd come to realise I'd just stolen the main plot or premise of whatever the last thing I'd watched
Lord
or read
of the Rings
or seen.
Or,
yeah, Lord of the Rings, the Final Fantasy games.
The usual suspects.
All this stuff. And it wasn't until like I was in my, I think I was about 20 when I actually wrote, I moved on to short story writing, but like as a practicality, you know, it seemed like, okay, you don't need to build a whole world. You need one idea and then you can turn that into a story.
Short stories are definitely great for that. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to write 400-page epic. But that's very interesting that you started off with sci-fi and fantasy. Were you writing when you were, even if it wasn't actually putting words on the page, you were just world-building, as you said. Were you doing that when you were a young teenager, or...?
Yeah, as I said, like, a lot of it will be, you know, horribly derivative and stuff. But it's something I'd like to revisit down the line when... Now that I have sufficient self-awareness to realise when I'm being unsubtle about my stealing. Well, I'm not going to say I still don't steal. All writers do. Like, we're a race of magpies. So.
What is the that Yeats quote? Good writers borrow, great writers steal. I think he's basically just giving himself justification.
Good writers are cat burglars. You don't notice them stealing. It's the bad ones. You can their fingerprints are everywhere.
That's very good, actually. So, in terms of influence in your teenager, what made you move away from sci-fi fantasy?
I'd still read a lot of it, but I suppose when I went to college and I'd done English Media and Cultural Studies out in IADT in Dunleary, and I really, really loved that. And it just, like, I mean, it opened my mind in so many ways, but specifically I was just reading so much more, you know, the volume of books they'd be giving us would be huge. So you just open up to a lot of new ideas that way and a lot of new styles of writing. And like, I'd read all sorts of fantasy and sci-fi when I was a kid, but to me, whenever I would go to write it, as I said, it would be something big and epic. So, you know, opening up to newer stuff made me sort of realise that, like, oh, you can write things that don't have to be an entire world. They can just be, like, one particular story, and, you know, that just started having more appeal to me the more I read.
I'm kind of, in a kind of a cynical sense, college brought you back down to earth from the from lofty sci-fi, or
no, not exactly. I just think I've since read a quote by Neil Gaiman that I'm probably going to get wrong here, but the gist of it is that he says whatever you want to write, you shouldn't solely read it. Like he said, you know, Tolkien didn't read epic fantasy. He read linguistic theory and myths and legends, and he wrote the, you know, he said the guys who just read Tolkien write derivative stuff. It's the same Nick Hornby said about the, he said, when you listen to the White Album, you can tell the Beatles listen to everything, you know, country, blues, psychedelia. He said, when you listen to Oasis, you can just tell they just listen to the White Album over and over again. So I sort of feel that, you know, I wouldn't say college brought me away from sci-fi and fantasy, but it gave me so many new influences that, like, you know, now when I go to write anything, I'm fairly confident that if I'm not wholly just stealing wholesale ideas like I was when I was younger.
Brilliant. So it's everything in dialogue. I mean, and in following on from that, do you pursue any other artistic forms, or artist or film? Or?
I act a bit. I've done some films. The last thing I've done, I was in the Docky Players, an amateur drama group out in Docky, obviously. And I was in their production of
Ballybrack, funnily enough.
Mama Blowin' from Ballybrack. I need a day pass to allow someone like me to be able to walk the streets of Docky without being apprehended. But we put on John B. Keane's Year of the Hiker in November And I've done a feature film called Bend that was shot on an incredibly low budget that people can look up on YouTube. And I've done a couple of other short films thanks to.
Wow, that's quite a CV. That's pretty nice. In terms of, you're here as a representative of The Runt magazine. It's funny, when you were talking about sci-fi and fantasy, The Runt is quite, it's a little bit supernatural and a little bit otherworldly in terms of its tone, but some of its illustrations as well. Am I right, or am I?
I think so, but I don't think it was a conscious decision. I mean, obviously, the last issue we had that you've seen was Planet of the Runt, and that was outer space themed, so that's naturally going to, lead on to. But yeah, by and large, I think there is a bit of, and I think it was just like we formed it when we finished up college, like myself and a group of my friends, and initially it was just this, like, you know, let's give ourselves a platform for our writing and a kind of incentive to write. Like, you know, we can just put a zine together and we can get it out and we can host a launch. And I suppose in that sense there was a lack of inhibitions about it because you weren't submitting it to any outside editor. And presumably that then just led to, you know, the supernatural style stuff you were describing. Like, those were just the avenues we decided to follow, and we didn't have inhibitions about, like, you know, will an editor like this, is this kind of thing what's considered good literature or whatever.
When you say, tell me more about the birth of The Runt. You were saying that it would give you a platform for your own writing. Was that the main goal, or did you want to use it as a place where, you know, various intellectual and literary ideas could be voiced, or was it just for publishing stories, poetry, whatever you have?
Well, the the beard was long and protracted and painful. And, you know,
much longer than your regular 9 months.
Absolutely. I mean, initially it literally was that I went to, in my last year in college, three of my friends there who were all involved with Rund, Colin Whelan, who just writes under the name Colin, Stephen Hughes, who writes under the name Boris Baloney, and Richard Howard, who has the courage to write under his own name. they done an event in the Exchange in Temple Bar where they put together zines of, like, separate zines of their own work, and just, like, launched it there and, you know, invited people along. And that was this eye-opener for me, because I you know, as I said, around then I'd started actually writing stuff that was finished, but it was a case of, like, oh, well, what am I going to do with this? You know, who's gonna publish this? And then I saw them and I thought, oh, I don't have to wait around for someone to, you know, some kind of, like, publishing magnate to burst into my house and say, you boy, you're a genius, I'll publish your work. You know, I said, I can do it myself. So when we, see, we were all up to our eyes in college work at that stage. So when we finished, I got a group of people together I thought would be interested and said, like, oh, what have we done, you know, our own zine. And so at that stage, it was just purely about giving ourselves a platform. And we discussed back and forth about what it was about. The first issue was meant to be, the idea that we're meant to do would be to, like, kind of satirize sort of, like, kind of business hyper-capitalist Wolf of Wall Street style logic, and that we would apply it to a new thing each issue. And the first one was, like, going to be business and friendship. But it took us so long to put it together because a lot of people were, you know, going into work or doing further studies. Like, the sort of post-college life wasn't this oasis we had thought it would be, but you know, that by the end we had kind of dumped that team, and it's just generally friendship teams. I mean, there's a kind of holdover in the first issue. There's, like, a form where it's a friendship assessment form, and you assess whether your friend has been good enough or not, and, you know, then you send it off, and they kind of and that's the only thing, that's the I suppose the only relic of, like, this being a sort of satire on the business world. And then after that, it just became easier just to team the collections. Like, I think the second one was music themed, and yeah, we slowly,
so you kind of fell into this this pattern of theming each issue.
Yeah, and then we slowly evolved towards widening the circle as well. Like, as I said, initially it was a platform for a group of us that started it, and then you know, whether it was just true, obviously you kind of go in with the best will in the world and think, oh, everyone will want to write something. And then they don't, so then you've got to seek out other people to do it. And then I think by the third issue, we had settled on the kind of shape we're in now, where we appoint one of us from the group of founders to edit it, and, you know, we put out a call for submissions to the public, and, you know, it's all in the editor's hands. Like, they get to choose what goes in and what doesn't, and it's no longer just about the group of us who started it. Like, the issue we're working on right now, Night of the Runt, which is Dream and Nightmare Team, we've had over 50 submissions, which is, I know it might be like small potatoes for the likes of Colony and Sting 5, but for us it's a long way since, like, a group of us got together, you know, to just put together.
Yeah,
you know.
Very, very positive steps there. Stick around, guys. We've got Colm Kearns from The Runt magazine right here on Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, on Near FM. We're going to take a piece of music now and get back to talking to Colm afterwards. This is The Beach Boys from their album Pet Sounds. I was looking it up today. 1966, this album was released. That is, that's something else anyway. Okay, well, this song is the first track off the album. It's Wouldn't It Be Nice. And we are back here on Writer's Block 90.3 Near FM with Colm Kearns and me, Morgan O'Reilly. Colm, just before we broke there for that wonderful piece of music,
I resent you putting on the Beach Boys, by the way. Like, I'm just going to look awful in comparison. You know, like, oh, Brian Wilson's a genius. Who's this guy he's talking to now?
Don't sell yourself so short, Colm. It is a literary show, after all. And we have very exciting things to talk about now, like the pragmatic matters of money and distribution and so on. With, I mean, you're an English student. I mean, I studied English in college, so I can only imagine it must have been terrifying to start confronting those kind of details when you take the brave step of actually founding a magazine.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, with costing, I had a few ideas I could hang on to. Like, I didn't want to give it away for free, if only because I felt like, you give something to people for free, you know, they might just take it out of politeness and never do a thing. Whereas even if they pay a little bit for it, they'll probably, you know, put some sense of value in it and make a point of reading it. And then other than that, I was like, oh, well, we want to make a little more money on it, and we spent printing it. But yeah, figuring out along the way and the business of like trying to get the cheapest possible printing and negotiating with like venues for places to hold the launches of each issue and all was just I'm very much feeling my way around the dark, and as are most of the group. I mean, some of them have some of us are lucky, like we have background, like, you know, booking gigs or doing things like that, so as far as on the event side they know a thing or two, but just in the general distribution and pricing, we're all very much on new territory. It's distribution is definitely something we want to improve on a lot. At the moment, I think there are issues available in Connolly Books in Temple Bar, in the Library Project in Temple Bar, and then the Winding Stairs, the north side of the Halfpenny Bridge.
Lovely little independent bookshop.
Yeah, it's a lovely place. But we really want to just kind of get more organised in terms of, you know, regularly renewing the stock of issues they have, kind of checking how many have sold, and I suppose making ourselves like giving ourselves a professional enough veneer to fool shops into stocking our stuff. I remember I went into I think the first time we were stocking them, I went into the Secret Booker and Record Shop on Wicklow Street.
But
I just had no clue what to do. And like, I didn't know whether I would go in and, you know, say sell them to the guy there for a cut price, and then he would like say I sold them, you know, issues for 150 each, and then he would sell them for €3, and that would be his profit. Or then there's this business of sale and return, whereby we'd agree on a percentage to take, and he wouldn't give me any money then, but we'd get in contact when he sold them. And I came in, I didn't know a thing, and he said, look, you know, they look really good, and he was good enough, he bought a copy for himself, just, you know, the guy around the place, you know, so, but you need to figure out how you're going to do this. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, like, toddled off. And then I think months or probably a year later, when we were a newer issue was coming out, and I came into your man and he had this docket book, and I was saying like, oh, we do it on sale and return, we keep this amount of percentage. And he said to me, you know what, you're the only artist who's ever come into me with any semblance of a business plan. And I just thought, the only reason I have that is because I remember what it was like coming in here without one, you know.
Well, I suppose it's all a learning experience. But in terms of, I mean, you're throwing all this jargon at me, business plan and profitability and percentage and stuff. I mean, did you...
It's all smoke and mirrors.
did you count on that stuff when you were... Or, I mean, was it just, like, let's start a magazine here. We can publish our own stories. We can publish other stories. We can have, you know, great essays, great ideas.
Yeah. I mean, it was really definitely a labour of love. And, anything to do with the money side of it is much less about, like, earning any kind of profit for ourselves and more about just covering the cost of printing and things. Like, we a lot of us felt like, you know, I always, when, like, unless I'm in really dire financial straits, I'll say, oh, sure, you know, I'll throw in some money to print off issues. But a lot of people in the group are very fair-minded and kind of feel, you know, well, we can't just, like, when the time comes, just be going around willy-nilly to people saying, hey, you're in the runt, you know, you've got to fork up this amount of money so we can print new issues. We've got to have some way of getting that back. So I think it's kind of self-sustaining at this point. Like, I think on the last sort of run of them, we made a little more money than the cost of printing. So, you know, that's enough as far as we're concerned.
Okay, very nice.
We're not out of pocket. I should say, in terms of distribution as well, I don't know if you're going to deal with this anyway, but we don't have any, like, direct copies of it online, which was, it goes back to something when you're talking to, his name is escaping me from
Dave? Dave Lord?
No.
Oh, Vanessa.
Vanessa, sorry. Veronica was on the tip of my tongue and it was wrong. I shouldn't say that. She's been very good to the run. Vanessa, lovely woman. But when you're talking to her and you said about, like, it's nice to have something physical to treasure, and that's kind of the thing we wanted to do, because what Dave was saying about the internet's great, that it allows you to, you know, communicate with so many people and anyone can put it up. But also from the point of view of producing the content, you can really feel like you're just shooting it into a void. You know what I mean? You put it up online somewhere and you're not sure exactly how many people are looking at it. And even when it says there's a certain amount of people looking at it, you don't know if that's, like, they've got 20 tabs open and you're one of them and they've glanced at it, you know. Whereas you do feel when we do the launch events, or when, you know, I was actually asked to autograph one of them with the Winding Stair for, which is still, like, I think that one will go on my tombstone. But, when you get stuff like that, it feels like, oh, people really care about it. But in terms of online content, we do have the last two launches we filmed. And so you can find them, maybe just look for the run scene on YouTube, and we've got all, you know, videos of performances from content in the zines.
Where do you do the launches?
The last one of Planet of the Runt was in the Vintage Room of the Workman's Club.
Oh, very good.
And the one prior to that was in the Bellow Bar. And is it still the Lower Deck?
I couldn't tell you.
I think it might be the Lower Deck. The pub is still called the Lower Deck, and the Bellow Bar is the bar below it.
Okay.
So we filmed the two of those, and so you can find some like content from Indazine.
Brilliant,
like, readings
and free booze. No.
We do give out free sweets and stuff, but you know, why we get the places for little or nothing is that we can say, well, we'll have people in, they'll be buying drinks. So
I'd like to talk about some of your own work that I've been reading over the past week and thoroughly enjoying over the past week.
Thank you very much.
Dizavalna, everything that you sent me has been published in the Runt.
One exception, I think. What's my threshold for swearing here? You know, the one it's got a grade C swear word.
Oh yeah, no, that's fine. That's
okay, it. Okay. Yeah. Well, with Bitches Dig Space, that wasn't.
I thought that was the best title of a lot, actually. Yeah.
That was written for the launch of Planet of the Runt, because the story that's actually in Planet of the Runt, The Incapables, is just a quite bleak piece, and I just thought it wouldn't be much fun to just stand up and read that. So, and also with the recent launches, we didn't want them to just be. It's us reading the zine, so there will be cases where, you know, we'll get someone who has a story that fits in with the team but isn't in the zine itself to read at the launch.
Very good.
So from our point of view, it's not like we're giving away the whole zine by reading it, but also from the people who's coming there, it's, you know, it makes an event in itself, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There was two stories, the Piper of the House of Roach and Rise. I felt they could almost be viewed as companion pieces. There was a really Franz Kafka, I think, is mentioned in both, and there's definitely that kind of real social conscience in both pieces. Were you going for that? Am I right? I mean, in the Piper in the House of Roach, there's this very old and sophisticated character. The phrase "old world grandeur" is used, and then Rise seems to be, the character in the Piper of the House of Roach is eventually overwhelmed by this kind of Pied Piper character.
Yeah,
and in Rise seems to pick up where Metamorphosis left off.
Yeah, well, you're right in the money with the companion pieces, because they're both in our fourth issue, The Runt's Domain, and that was public domain themed, so it was all, I think the figure varies from country to country, but it's, you know, materials over 80 years old or whatever, you know, 70 years old after the author has died, anyone can do it. So, you know, you have that slew of stuff like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and things like that.
And a lot of the Joyce, I think Joyce just went down
copyright.
Yeah,
he did. So we just had to find stuff in the public domain and sort of riff off it. And I love Kafka in general. I actually think he's really funny a lot of the time, which I feel kind of gets...
I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, well, The Castle is just hilarious. I think you have to sort of go in expecting it to be funny, and then it clicks. It's like, oh yeah, this is ridiculous. But Metamorphosis is probably an exception to that, because it's just really bleak. And I just decided, like, I was like, oh, you know, write a sequel to that where he comes back to life. And I think initially in my head it was going to be written like a manifesto for all the people that had turned into Beatles, like in Metamorphosis. Like, I'd read stuff about you know, people have expended so much ink talking about, like, what is Metamorphosis really about? And one of the things here was that it was like your man being kind of overworked, or sort of he's you know, being sucked up by the parasites of society, and he becomes one. So I thought, oh well, if that's true, then this presumably happens to a lot of people in the world Kafka's depicting.
It definitely strikes a chord with me in, like, kind of just all of this modern debate about a capitalist societies, people being worked to the bone and not getting any return for it. Even with that woman who sent the letter into the open letter about the water charges, and on her tombstone wasn't going to be written, you know, she was a great mother and she paid her taxes.
Yeah.
You know? the story Roy's definitely. I saw definite social similarities, with that kind of the just the discord in Irish society at the moment.
Oh yeah, well, I'm glad of that. I mean, I don't know, kind of filibuster in politics here, but something I feel strongly about. Like, I was at the water demonstration on the 10th, and you know, I've been to a lot of demonstrations and protests and things like that. So I don't think, you know, that was one where in my head I wasn't as like kind of consciously going after my deals in Irish society as I was just like trying to take what I took from the metamorphosis to its logical end, like these people being overworked and unappreciated. But you know, I suppose you're right. I mean, the two things do they do combine, and they are kind of come out of the same feeling.
Tell us about what's the future of the Runt. When's the next issue?
Well, the issue we're working on currently is called Night of, it's probably going to be titled Night of the Runt, and it's dream and nightmare themed. And my Bobby from the core group, Bobby Lowe, he's editing this this issue, and I was talking to him recently, and he said it should be more or less done in like in a working form by the end of the week. We still need to get artwork and stuff done, but in terms of him having selected you know, the submissions and edited them and whatever, that should be done. So we had hoped to have a launch of that sometime probably by the end of January. So people can kind of look out for news of that on our Facebook and Twitter. If you just look for the Runt Zine on either Facebook or Twitter, you'll find us, and we'll be keeping people up to pace with that. We're also hoping tentatively to starting a Runt podcast, which would feature like performances of some of the stories, and then just well, I'll probably go back to my roots and start stealing and just steal a bit from you and just, you know, use it as a radio literature thing.
So we can find you on Twitter, we can find you on Facebook, we can find you on YouTube as well, and give us the three locations where the magazine might be.
The Winding Stair, Connolly Books, and the Library Bar. Not the Library Bar, the Library Project.
The Library Bar, I wish that was a real place.
Oh, it is. It's above the Central Hotel on Exchequer Street.
Okay, I will be there later today.
Go there, yeah.
Okay, if you want to find me, I will be in the Library Bar tonight. But anyway, enough of that. We have had, I'd like to... Big thank you to Colm Kearns for coming in today from the Runt Zine.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
Oh, absolutely. No problem. Well, this was Writer's Block today. We will be back on January the 2nd, so I'd like to wish all of the listeners a happy Christmas and a happy new year. As always, big thank you to my sound man, Colm Rochford. It's been a great help. And this was Writer's Block, 90.3 Near FM. Thanks for listening.